it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm just flesh and bone, but more importantly, I'm a soul. Mm. And that soul is accountable to one being. Mm. One being.
Yep.
And really two temporarily because also your wife. But, you know, one, you should be accountable to your spouse because that is a spiritual union.
Like your church.
Exactly. Like the bride of Christ and Christ come together. That is what marriage is supposed to be. Mm-hmm. But I mean this in the most, it used to impact me. I mean this in the most serious way. I literally don't care about what people say about me. I couldn't care
How
less.
Long did it take you to get to that point?
Years.
Yep.
It takes years. And you grow a thicker skin and or you start to realize what really matters in life. I mean, I've had an unbelievably blessed life. Been doing this now, it'll be 12 years on June 5th.
Such a young man to
and
do
I'm
it.
So young.
Yeah, so praise God. I mean, I've been all across the world. I've met with world leaders. I've flown in Air Force One, got to know a president. Hopefully he becomes president again. We get to, you know, I have an amazing family, the podcast, Turning Point USA, all that stuff. And so you experience that and you're like, what actually matters? What matters is your relationship with the divine, your relationship with your family, your kids, and maybe a close collection of friends and your relationship with the truth.
That's Charlie Kirk before Donald Trump won re-election, obviously. But gosh, it's hard to say anything about Charlie Kirk that he hasn't already said in such eloquent words. Let's get to our guest. Joe Concha joins us, Fox News contributor, writer at the Washington Examiner as well. Joe, I mean, I don't even have a question to ask you. There's so much on our plate today as Americans. What are your thoughts today?
Well, when you're numb, it's hard to think too much. You know, I couldn't believe when I saw that on social media. And unfortunately, you know, you knew, you know, when you saw it where he was struck that he kept hearing like, you know, maybe he has a pulse, maybe he's been stabilized. And I just thinking, I don't think so. And then, you know, I remember the fact that he was at Fox just a couple of weeks before and he was hosting Fox and Friends Weekend and he bought his family there and his daughter, maybe you've seen it on Fox by now. She's probably maybe 3 years old. And once the show was over, she ran onto the set and gave him a big hug. And you never saw him smile bigger. And I think that's the thing about Charlie. Like, yeah, great career, turning point, starting that at 18 from scratch and going to where he is now, where you have millions of followers. You're selling out every venue and you're actually affecting presidential campaigns. I mean, Trump will tell you that he probably helped. Charlie did help flip Arizona back to Trump. But in the end, it was all about his faith. It was all about his family, and that was everything to him. And that's like the part here where I'm numb because I have young kids, not as young as Charlie's, but I mean, they've been robbed of their father. For what? Yeah. Because this guy said some things that you may have disagreed with. And by the way, like if you have a disagreement with him, he literally would say, come to the front during his Turning Point USA events and say, all right, whoever disagrees with me most, I want to talk to you first. And the debates were civil. Like they were actually, you know, he did it with a smile and that's how it's supposed to be. But the left doesn't want that. Mm-hmm. They want to win debates by violence or death. And we're seeing it more and more. And I'm sorry, between Trump and Charlie Kirk and Steve Scalise and Rand Paul, I'm sorry, I'm seeing a pattern here and I don't want to hear anything otherwise.
You know, I know you cover the media quite a bit on a normal day. And we saw MSNBC or whatever the heck they're called now fire Dowd, who made those heinous remarks. I saw Stephen Colbert's message. It seemed pretty reasonable. I thought, okay, good for you that you didn't, you know, take it an opportunity to do something embarrassing. I think it's dizzying right now for people probably like you and me who were so in the thick of it. It's kind of hard. It's like I want to run this direction. Now I want to run that direction. What's your advice to people who are consuming just the amount of information that we can consume in this day and age?
Well, that's the thing, right? I think social media, it's constant, right? And I was just on with John and Sandra, and I'm sorry about the noise behind me, on Fox News. And, you know, the question was like, well, do you think we'll get back to a point where, you know, the rhetoric is more civil? And I said, I'm not optimistic about that because with social media, all I know is after the two Trump assassination attempts, literally like 2 weeks after Trump was nearly assassinated in Butler, Pennsylvania, you have Tim Walz out there saying like, he's a threat to democracy and we must stop him. And then you have Dan Goldman, who's the poor man's Adam Schiff in Congress, saying that Donald Trump needs to be not, you know, beaten, eliminated. Like, this language, it's intentional, right? And 98% of people will be like, oh, well, you know, that's just political hyperbole, and he really just means beat Trump and make sure he doesn't get back into office. There's that 2% that take this stuff seriously, and Ryan Ruth and nearly assassinated the president 1 year ago today. It was on September 13th at Trump International, and literally his manifestos echoed exactly what Democrats were saying on the campaign trail. So words have consequences, and I have a feeling we're going to revert right back to the Hitler, fascist, authoritarian stuff probably within 2 weeks.
Yeah, that might be too long of a prediction. I think it
I know,
even
I'm
take,
being generous.
You're being very generous. We're speaking with Joe Concha, Fox News contributor and writer at the Washington Examiner. You know, I ask myself, I was talking about this a little bit. I think I was talking about this yesterday before this happened, but just the people talk about Donald Trump and his rhetoric. Jen Psaki has been, gosh, she's just, I can't even. The idea
that, human being.
Yes, simply. But people talk about Donald Trump and the way he speaks. And you've been covering politics, you've been covering government and the news for a long time, the media. I feel like Donald Trump showed up to respond to rhetoric. I feel like Donald Trump's was the first person who stood up and said, we're not going to take this any longer. The kind of bullying that was coming from the other side of the political aisle. Like, he became a voice for the voiceless, and in a fight that we weren't even engaged in, that we were just used to losing. But for whatever particular reason, rhetoric is only ascribed to Donald Trump. I actually don't think that he's really been as bad as he's accused of being. He's just pushing back, and that's apparently a great sin.
Yeah, Charlie Kirk and Donald Trump are cut from the same cloth. They make common sense arguments, and the left doesn't like that very much, but because forever they got to control the narrative, especially through the media. And now we've seen the great equalizers come, right? Fox News, and then X, owned by Elon Musk. Yeah. Suddenly, well, you know, you don't get to control the narrative anymore, and they don't like that because they're losing power. They're losing the argument, quite frankly. And that's why, like, even when we saw with this poor woman that was stabbed on that train in Charlotte,
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
By a madman who was arrested 14 times prior. 14. I mean, for violent crimes, by the way. She had no business. Even his own mother said he had no business being out on the street. And you still would turn on CNN and they're defending him. Like, so yeah, if we're gonna push back against that, it's not even like a Republican versus Democrat argument or red versus blue. It's common sense versus chaos. So Trump chooses common sense. And I guess they like chaos because chaos is a ladder and it keeps him in power.
Joe Concha speaking with us right now. I want to shift because it is September 11th, and I was kind of mentioning at the beginning of the show that the whole year, once it hits September, if you're planning in media, you know that September 11th is going to be a particular kind of show. And then this happens yesterday, and it just becomes even more burdensome to think about who we are as a country and why we are the way we are as a country. And patriots like Charlie Kirk fighting for the greatness of what this country is. It's such a tragic loss to lose him yesterday in this horrible way. When you think of September 11th, 24 years later, you're raising kids who only know about it from their history books like I am. Yeah. What's your reflection?
Well, I was in New York that day. I wasn't downtown. I was supposed to have a meeting right next door to the World Trade Center, and then it got canceled like 2 days before that. So I doubt I would have died or anything like that. But it's like, but you just kind of like replay that in your mind. And I lost friends there, including a guy named Paul Aquaviva, who I did a TV show with in high school. Like, that's when I got started in TV, believe it or not. And Paul was in the World Trade Center, unfortunately, at Cannon Fitzgerald. His wife, Courtney, who I also went to high school with, even elementary school, Courtney, for that matter, was pregnant with his second child. So imagine going to that funeral and seeing her, you know, 8 months. I go back to that. But then if I'm comparing like now and then, from a political perspective, I remember George W. Bush, and he goes to Yankee Stadium for Game 3 of the World Series just a couple of weeks after 9/11. And he's about to throw out the first pitch, and he's in the bowels of Yankee Stadium kind of warming up. And he's about to walk out, and then Derek Jeter stops him. He's a shortstop, was a shortstop of the Yankees at the time, captain. And Jeter says, do not throw from the front of the mound. He says, throw from the rubber or else they will boo you. And Bush like kind of like does the nod. All right, thank you, Derek. I appreciate it. So then he goes out there with a bulletproof vest on, mind you, and a jacket. You know, pretty cool night. and throws a perfect strike, and the crowd roars, and they're going USA, and you're like, a Republican president was at Yankee Stadium, and the whole place was chanting USA for him. Republicans, Democrats, didn't matter. It was red, white, and blue that night. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, like, all right, can we ever get back to that? And my answer is no, we can't. Because I'm seeing just with Charlie Kirk alone. Like, you think that it would just be universal condemnation. Instead, go to Blue Sky sometime, which is an absolute loony bin. And you see people posting videos. Forget, like, writing, like, snarky stuff. Mm-hmm. Celebrating this, laughing about it, saying Charlie Kirk deserved it. And then you see Matthew down on MSNBC saying the same thing. You know, basically, you know, he said some hateful things. And what comes around goes around, and Katie Couture is just sitting there nodding her head. It's like, all right, we're lost. We're completely lost.
We're not the same. That is for certain. No. Joe, Donald Trump's still going to be at Yankee Stadium tonight, right? That's still the plan?
Yeah. Yankees Tigers, 7:05 p.m. Eastern. He'll be there for 9/11.
How do you see that going?
I would hope. When it's 9/11 and the death of Charlie Kirk, that it's not going to be like some sort of like booze or anything like that. If you do that, then I'm sorry. You can't just hold that for a couple minutes while the president maybe walks out, throws out the first pitch. I'm not sure exactly what he'll be doing there. Maybe he'll just be watching the game like he has with the Super Bowl and the Daytona 500, U.S. Open, so on. So I would hope that people on 9/11 at least would show some humanity and just, if you have a problem with the guy, maybe just keep it to yourself just this one night and just let's remember all those folks that died needlessly in 9/11. That's all.
You know, I think to myself about Charlie Kirk's happy warrior willingness to speak out and say, you know, like, it's cool to be conservative. It's cool to say, you know, to want to start a family.
We're the cool kids now.
Yes.
Yeah.
He mainstreamed it in a way that makes me realize, I think you probably experienced this too, that there are so many conservatives among us. They've just been so quiet for so long. I think that people need to own that. It doesn't have to be obnoxious, but maybe if people see how many of us there are, maybe something will change. Maybe not, but maybe.
Maybe. All I know is that Trump said earlier today that he thinks that Charlie Kirk could have been president one day. And when you think about it, yeah, he's only 31. He's built this movement. He is insanely articulate. Obviously, he knows how to debate. He does so in an optimistic, happy way. He knows his stuff. Can do interviews great. Knows how to rally a crowd. There is a performative aspect to running for president now, as we may have heard.
Yeah.
And at the same time, he's smart as a whip, despite not going to college, which shows you how overrated college is. So, yeah, could he have been president, in 15 years from now? Absolutely. Why couldn't he?
Yeah, amen to that. He was a breath of fresh air and sorely missed. Joe, thank
Absolutely.
You for being with us. We appreciate you.
Thank you, Annie.
Take care. Bye-bye. Fox News contributor, writer at the Washington Examiner, author of the book, which... Boy, if you need a pick-me-up, the greatest comeback ever, Inside Trump's Big Beautiful Campaign. A must-read. I consider it a must-listen-to. The audiobook is narrated by Joe Concha. It's the one I was listening to when I went to Washington, D.C. at the end of April, and I walked around the National Mall listening to Joe Concha read me the story of Donald Trump's epic comeback. Maybe the best, the greatest comeback ever. Let's take a break. At 1:30, we're going to speak with Governor Mike Kehoe. We're going to talk to him about September 11th. We're going to talk to him about Charlie Kirk. And if we have time, we'll talk about redistricting and other things that are happening here in the state of Missouri. We'll be right back.
Yeah, I know that it's somewhat object of mockery to say thoughts and prayers, but thoughts and prayers for his family. They need it from all of us. And Jesse's right. If they could do this, they are capable of anything. I think that was the message. I believe that was the message. It's really hard to radicalize Republicans.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we're not the radical type. But if you thought that you were going to shut a movement down, you're going to get a rude awakening. You woke us the f*** up.
That was Greg Gutfeld, uncensored, on The Five yesterday, and felt every bit of that in my bones. Listening to Greg Gutfeld talk about, people are asking, like, what's the message here? I think it's pretty clear what the message is. Fear is the credit that they want to, that they peddle in. It's what, you know, what's another word for fear? Terror. It's what a terrorist does. I think back to September 11th of 2001, was a senior in high school, and I couldn't process what I was experiencing. It was like all of a sudden I got to school and people were speaking in French. I'm like, I don't know French. I don't know how to communicate. I don't know what you're telling me. I don't understand the words that these people are saying. I remember being 17 years old and thinking, what is a terrorist? Maybe it was in movies, but no movies I wanted to watch when I was 17 and younger. I've lived my whole adult life with a very keen understanding of what terror looks like, what terrorism looks like. What we saw yesterday, almost exactly 24 years later, is terror. Senator Eric Schmidt is speaking on Fox News right now. Let's listen to this interview. He's speaking about the Charlie Kirk situation.
It's terrible. It's devastating. I've really struggled, honestly. Not done many interviews since this happened, and it's been difficult to put the words together. Charlie was a friend. He was a patriot. He was somebody who was really fearless. And it's been a tough 24 hours, but I think our prayers need to be with his family. It's a long road ahead. Somebody whose life was cut short way too soon, 31 years old, had built this organization that was doing the important work on the ground for the America First movement. And one of the things that I admire most about his life was his willingness to engage. To go to the college campuses, to where the young people were at, and engage in debate, the thoughtful exchange of ideas. And if you watch some of his videos, even in situations where somebody on the other side of the debate was being booed, he would tell people to, you know, sort of, hey, calm down, let her be heard, or let him be heard, and he would engage in this debate. And so, it's just so tragic. He was a great guy, a friend, and he was killed for his ideas. And there's just no place for that in this country. We should have the maximum room for debate and zero tolerance for political violence. And sadly, he was taken away from us way too soon.
You know, he was famous, Senator, for engaging people in dialogue, even if they were of a different opinion than he. He would invite people who disagreed with him to come right up to the front and grab the microphone and start a discussion with him. If we can go back to that drone footage for a second, because it looks like in the gravel on the top of that roof on the Losi Center, that there may be some impressions that potentially were left by the shooter. But here we have another situation, a little more than a year after that situation in Butler, Pennsylvania, where you had an unguarded roof that an assassin was able to gain access to, in this time, tragically, to carry out an assassination. Who's looking after the roofs?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the situation was on the ground, what kind of security, how many officers were there, what kind of advance work was done at the university. I don't know. I will just say, as a former prosecutor, just seeing some of the images, and I've not talked to anybody at the FBI, I've not included in anything. Just some hallmarks. This was very planned. You can see as he's walking, his fists are closed. It could be just to avoid having fingerprints. The gun could have been broken down. I mean, this was planning, and really an evil act to go onto a college campus there and engage in a political assassination of somebody who just really believed in free and open debate and really had his finger on the pulse of where the country was headed and where it needs to go. I just cherish his friendship. I remember going to Arizona the weekend before the election in to meet up with President Trump and then do a swing in Michigan and in Wisconsin, and talking to Charlie down there in early November. He's just such an optimistic guy. And he said, hey, we got this handled in Arizona. And you look back, and of course, President Trump swept all the battleground states, but he was engaged in the real work. He was willing to talk to anybody. He was a respectful guy. And there's just no place for what happened yesterday in America. So we pray for his family, pray for him, and pray for our country.
So, Senator, we're getting an update on this presser that we were anticipating at 2:45 Eastern time, 12:45 local time there. At first, we learned that it had gotten pushed back due to rapid developments. Now, the Department of Public Safety there in Utah has issued a brand new statement saying, due to the rapid developments in our investigation, we will suspend this. We will release an updated time later today. So they obviously, Senator, are making enough progress in this investigation and hopefully the manhunt that they want to put off the presser while they continue to find this person.
Yeah, and I think they're probably trying to get as much information as they can before relaying it to the public, and so you don't want to jump in front of that investigation. There's a lot that's going to unfold, but I think as a country right now, just to continue to pray for his family. I know I had a hard time last night. I have two teenage daughters, and just trying to talk about what happened. And the images are horrific, but we ought to remember Charlie's life for more than those horrific images, but the impact I think he had on our country. He was a real patriot.
Senator Eric Schmidt speaking with Fox News right now. We wanted to dip in and listen to that. You did hear also, them talking about this presser. We've been watching it. I don't know if I've even mentioned on the air that it was a potential going to happen. It's like a little bit of the inside baseball of how we run our show is we'll get notifications. We've got all the TVs on in here. We are the Fox News radio affiliate here in St. Louis. So when you want to be connected with the updates that are coming through, Fox News is going to get them first. You're in the right place listening to 97.1 because we can go to that. We have the ability to do that in our partnership with them. And I am watching because they're saying that they're going to have an FBI update. And all of a sudden, Brad said, no, they're not going to have an update. They're pushing it back. What is the phrase? Rapid developments?
Yeah, rapid developments.
So, you know, I find that to be good news. I don't want another update that's like, here's the picture. We're hoping to find this guy. Anybody knows anything, please tell us. I want to be the person who's saying, if you know anything, please tell us, FBI. Let us know what you found out. I have a lot of thoughts and judgments on the last 24 hours that regarding the FBI reporting twice that they had someone in custody and then having to release them. But I think we're way too close to this situation happening the way it did to be making a judgment on that stuff. So I'm going to hold my breath and wait for that. It will carry it certainly here on 97.1 when it happens. A very quick break. Governor Mike Kehoe to speak on the importance of this day when we return.
Charlie Kirk have felt. Charlie was a giant of his generation, a champion of liberty, and an inspiration to millions and millions of people. Our prayers are with his wonderful wife, Eric, and his beautiful children. Fantastic people they are. We miss him greatly, yet I have no doubt that Charlie's voice and the courage he put into the hearts of countless people, especially young people, will live on. I'm pleased to announce that I will soon be awarding Charlie Kirk posthumously the Presidential Medal of Freedom. The date of the ceremony will be announced, and I can only guarantee you one thing, that we will have a very big crowd.
President Trump speaking today, this morning, at a 9/11 memorial service, I believe at the Pentagon. It's a difficult day, and it's important for us to take time and reflect on what we've lost in this day, and we wanted to give the governor of the state of Missouri the opportunity to join us to talk about the weight of September 11th, 2025 specifically. Governor Mike Kehoe, the governor of the state of Missouri, thank you for being with us today. It's a very, very burdensome day for Americans of all walks of life, and we're glad that you're here with us to talk about it.
Annie, I appreciate you having me on. I returned from a first responder ceremony commemorating 9/11 here in Jefferson City just a few minutes ago. So it's a day that we need to make sure we remember. And obviously, fresh off of yesterday's news, it's a tough day for a lot of Americans today.
Yeah, you know, I think about September 11th. My recollection of it as being a 17-year-old at the time. It's like a hate that I didn't know existed. Hatred towards the United States of America, but also the response that a lot of Americans had afterwards. We didn't even really know who our enemy was, but we knew we had one. And I kind of wonder if 24 years later, if it feels like there's this sort of hatred that's taking hold of this country right now. You're in politics. How do you manage this type of moment that we're in?
Well, let me just say that, you know, my wife and I are incredibly saddened by yesterday's political assassination of Charlie Kirk. Political violence, it just tears our nation from its very foundation. And America was built on passionate and peaceful debate and freedom of expression. There's no place for this in our country. And it's not who America is. It's not who Missouri is. And it's interesting that as we talked with firefighters and policemen and EMS providers today, and they asked me where I was, and I was in Detroit at a Ford meeting, and I'll never forget that day. But what I won't forget, Annie, is The country came together like a way nobody ever thought would happen, amongst the biggest tragedy we had, certainly on our own soil. In the days, weeks, and months following, you couldn't buy an American flag. You couldn't, I mean, the patriotism of Americans was potentially, since maybe Pearl Harbor, at an all-time high. And that's where we need to get to. We're Americans. We're brothers and sisters with each other. There are enemies who are after us. We saw that 24 years ago today. We continue to see evil in the world. But it's certainly not with each other. And if I could get anybody to understand one thing, just because somebody thinks a different way than you do, whether it's religious, which Charlie Kirk, by the way, was an incredible, proud servant of Christ, or it's political, it doesn't necessarily make them a person you have to harm another to stop, because that doesn't do any good. And it just, you know, continues the problem.
Yeah, certainly. Governor Mike Kehoe speaking with us right now. You know, one thing I was speaking about this a little bit earlier in the show, but you can spend a lot of people who are listening right now. You might have done the same. Hopefully you have the ability to kind of turn it off. I don't. But you can spend so much time on social media and it just starts to rot your brain to see some of the reactions that are coming out of the tragic event of yesterday. And then you compare it with September 11th. And I want to remind people that we do have a choice as to who we look to in times of tragedy and in times of chaos. And I think it was Mr. Rogers said that look for the helpers. And I think that September 11th is an amazing example of when you look for the helpers, there's so much good to see. And you speaking of being with some first responders today, those helpers are still everyday people who don't get acknowledged, you know, to doing the job that they're doing. In many cases, a lot of these first responders have been demonized in the past. But there are helpers all around us. And I'm sure that you've met a lot of them and you've, you know, greeted a lot of them today and in your time as governor.
Well, and Annie, as you might recall, and I think some of your listeners know, I'm from North City, St. Louis. And, yeah. You know, after my dad left when I was a year old, youngest of six, it was the first responder community. It was policemen and firefighters who brought food and clothes and things to our house that we needed. Now, my mother was a proud Irish woman, and she didn't want to take all that. But the reality was, it was that community who helped raise myself, my brother, and my sisters. And so I have an incredible amount of respect for those folks and their families who support them. These men and women leave their house every day for their shift, and there's a lot of uncertainty of if they're going to come back. And those families go through that. And so for us to do nothing but honor, it's almost sad that we just kind of take this one day and do it, although we should be doing it today, absolutely. But every day we should be thanking our first responder community and their families to support them. There's no two ways about it.
We're speaking with Governor Mike Kehoe, the 58th governor of the state of Missouri. There have been a lot of, I use the word battles, and it's you know, kind of a semantical way to talk about arguments and political fights that we're having right now. But Missouri has been at the epicenter of the news cycle leading up to this moment in time with the redistricting, with the IP reform. You're leading in this regard from the governor's office. What do you want to say to people who might be looking at Missouri right now with the redistricting? What is the goal here in getting this job done? Is it a reflection of the people of your state?
Well, I think we need to have in Washington, D.C., we need to represent Missouri's values. And as you know, the listeners know, I've traveled the state extensively the last several years, every corner, every county multiple times. And Missouri's values don't represent sometimes the values that we see in Washington, D.C. Certainly the values of Hakeem Jeffries, for instance, do not match Missouri values. And, you know, if you just go back 25 years ago and you take, you know, 10 or 15 counties in southeast Missouri and 15 or 20 counties in northeast Missouri, you could not find a Republican in the courthouse. They were all Democrats. My mother was born and raised a Democrat. Mm. But what my mother would say, and those people in those communities would say, is that the Democrat Party has left them. And now those same counties and courthouses, you can't find a Democrat. It's all Republicans. So Missouri's values align more with the Republican Party, the work that represents the working class, that understand what it means to not penalize success and keep government out of your way. And we wanted the opportunity for Missourians to be able to see what that looked like. Nobody was happy with the maps that were passed in 2022. It became part of a kind of an argument within this building on trying to get those maps passed as we were required by Constitution. But when you see Texas revisiting this and some other states looking at it, We thought it was time to take a look at that.
We're speaking with Governor Mike Kehoe. I wanted to also ask you, there's a lot of national conversation surrounding the usage of the National Guard, the president's offer to send it to places that are wanted. Of course, me living in the state of Illinois, watching Chicago make a mess of a situation that was messy enough as it was. I have a lot of people asking me, Governor, why aren't they coming to St. Louis? It's my understanding that the state has taken over the police force in St. Louis. I might not have the words correct on that framing, but what is your viewpoint from the governor's office on the safety, security, the law enforcement in St. Louis? And is there a scenario where you would want the president's help?
Well, first of all, we want St. Louisans and our visitors to be safe. I know that community, born and raised, as I mentioned earlier. We want people to be safe. And yes, this year, with the help of two local St. Louis elected officials, Brad Chris from South St. Louis and Nick Shore from St. Charles County, we passed legislation that did multiple things for law enforcement all across the state. But one piece of that was resuming state control of the St. Louis City Police Board. So local citizens that live in St. Louis, that are St. Louisans, are on that board that will work with Chief Tracy. I'm a fan of Chief Tracy. He's done a great job of driving the numbers down since he's been there, since Gabe Gore has come on board. They've made great progress, but we wanted to make sure the police board was not political, and we wanted to be citizen-led. So by letting citizens help Chief Tracy recruit and retain law enforcement officers, build our officers back up, you know, to answer your question, we're 325 officers down in the St. Louis City Police Department. So my first priority would be let's build our officers back up. Let's work with Chief Tracy. Senator Schmidt has done a great job of working with Cash Patel and bringing in extra FBI resources and assets in the form of agents that we can use. We started on our first day of office on January 13th, signing executive order forming Operation Relentless Pursuit, where we're working with U.S. Marshals and Highway Patrol and local law enforcement, such as St. Louis City and St. Louis County, to go out and serve warrants to the worst of the worst. We're making great progress on that. So the president rightfully did a great job in D.C. I've been there many times, and I'm telling you, it wasn't easy to walk those streets. And I'm grateful that he did that. I know the citizens are grateful and the business owners are grateful that he did that. He's looked at a couple other states. I think that St. Louis has things going in the right direction. They have not had a conversation with me. We're obviously always going to keep our options open, but we want to make sure that we put in place what we've been working on the last several months and work to keep St. Louis citizens safe.
Yeah, Governor Kehoe, you know, from my perspective, Donald Trump is offering to go in and help these cities who haven't been willing to help themselves. And the state just this year has already implemented that step before Donald Trump had to do this in some of these other blue areas. So the process is happening here, and that is the benefit of a blue city that is residing in a red state with common sense leadership. Is there a scenario that you could see going forward where you would welcome the president's help to make St. Louis safer faster?
Well, we're always going to welcome the president's help. I mean, I would tell you when the tornado went through, We had multiple storms for about a 60-day period all across Missouri, but specifically in May when it went through in St. Louis. Christy Noem, the secretary, called me at 8:10 that morning, and I was at church that night literally praying when Donald Trump called me that afternoon personally just to make sure St. Louis was safe and what he could do to help. So the president has been very helpful to our state and specifically to our storm-damaged areas in southeast Missouri and the St. Louis region. So we always want to continue to look for ways that we can get help, but we also know that the federal government and, quite frankly, the state government doesn't always solve everybody's problems. And so using that local control that we just talked about with that local citizen-led police board with multiple assets that we have in the St. Louis region, we think is something. You're right. We took this into our own hands long before it became a popular talking point on social media.
Certainly Missouri did. It's always nice to see what the people on the west side of the Mississippi are doing, because they certainly are not on the east side. Governor Kehoe, we are grateful for you. We're grateful for your time on this special day and your words. We really thank you for being here with us.
Well, Annie, two things. First, thank you so much to our first responders and their families. I mean that from my heart. I can't thank them enough. And we as a nation need to get back to what we saw 24 years ago when we were loving and working with each other. And last but not least, we have no wall up on that river. You're free to move into Missouri. We would love to have an extra resident. That's a good common sense conservative. And so let me know if you need a moving van. I'm a Ford dealer. We'll get you a bunch of vehicles and we'll move that stuff overnight.
Man, this is hard to say no to, a diplomatic invitation with transportation. I like it.
Yes, ma'am.
Governor Kehoe, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Yes, ma'am.
All right, bye-bye. I wonder if I threw in Ryan Wiggins in that deal if they'd rescind it. I didn't ask him that. Ugh. No. I can't move my whole family. Can't move land. It's so nice to be able to come here, though. I wish St. Louis would get their act together. I did want to highlight, though, with Governor Kehoe, in the conversation, everybody's asking, I'm asking, well, bring the National Guard to St. Louis. Somebody commented on here, might have been Rick. I think it was like the National Guard in St. Louis might get me back to some Cardinals games. You know, we need two things. We need a safe environment to come into and a competitive baseball team. But if we only had one of those things, I'd take...
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
The safe environment to come watch Cardinals baseball in, regardless. There has to be a change. And it is true that the state of Missouri did say to the city of St. Louis, you guys aren't cutting it. We need to do something different. We're taking it over, which in essence is what Donald Trump is doing and offering to other places. The state of Missouri had their act together and did so quicker. Now we just need to see the fruits of those labors. And like you said, we need more police officers. Why you'd want to be a police officer in St. Louis, I'm not 100% sure, but God bless each and every one of you who do. We are indebted to you. I don't even know if I've, I guess Brad mentioned it in the time check. I don't know if I've mentioned this yet. The YouTube poll for today, would love to have you over at YouTube and participating in the conversation in such a heavy day. Are you more or less likely to be open about your political opinions today? More or less likely. Andy Fry YouTube channel. Go vote. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Andy Fry Show. September 11th, today is a day that, I'm going to be honest, in the last maybe 5 years of remembering September 11th, it feels a little less piercing and a little more like this is something that we're supposed to do. And I said this a little bit earlier in the show, but as my kids are getting older and they're asking questions, they're learning about it. There was one year that the kids didn't really talk about it. And we were like, what? And then there had been a mix-up in something, and they ended up, we didn't know that it was going to happen, but it was talked about the next day. So we spent a lot of time specifically discussing it. We watched some stuff, and you got to ask yourself, as a parent, like, what do I expose my kids to? Ethan, you were born in what year?
I was born on September 12th, 2000.
So you do not have a recollection of that day?
I do not.
How did you learn about it? Like, what has been your exposure? Because it's a history story for you.
Mm-hmm.
It's what we're experiencing right now in the wake of Charlie Kirk. I feel like the September 11th thing was, I mean, the actual horror that you can imagine feeling watching all of that happen in real time. Like, whatever you can imagine, it's just exponentially worse. How have you been educated with September 11th?
My mom lived in New York City. Went to school there for a couple of years. So there were points early in my childhood when she would, in a very sort of sensitive way, say, oh, you know, many people died, a horrible thing. You know, we actually had a deck of cards with the Twin Towers on them. And I remember at times of my childhood that getting brought up, but they're no longer there anymore. But it was around the 10-year anniversary where I felt like there was a lot of extra media coverage because it was 10 years. And
yeah.
You know, I remember watching, you know, CBS do a 9/11 10 years later, I don't know, documentary or whatever it may have been. And I remember just learning so much information. And as a kid, more and more every single year, being exposed to the kind of evil that occurred in order to make all of that happen. As you heard, birthday September 12th.
Yeah.
So always kind of felt a connection with that, with that day, being that it was around such a, you know, an important day in my life, right? And there was always a huge somberness for me growing up, knowing just the horrors that occurred. And like we talked about earlier in the show, the not being able to explain the evil. Why would someone do that? And that was always really hard for me growing up. But I also felt like because of those connections, I also had an intrigue to understand and learn about it. So I do have a fascination with everything that occurred on that day. I mean, we were able to visit New York City a couple of years ago, and the 9/11 Museum, I mean, if you haven't been, put it at the top of your bucket list. I mean, talk about just educational.
So
much information.
After the show is over today on YouTube, I did this last year. I think I've done it maybe for a couple years in a row. But I want you to come to the Annie Fry YouTube channel, the live broadcast right now. In 2019, I won a Gracie Award, which is a national award. And I was recognized as, I won the Gracie Award for non-morning host of a radio show or something. I don't know. It's very prestigious. I can't remember the title of it. I mean, the Gracie Award is actually a pretty big deal. And I got to go to New York City to receive the award. And my producer, everybody who's been listening for a long time remembers Katie. My producer Katie and I went, and my husband was there with us, and we went to the 9/11 Museum, and I videoed it, and I have a video on the Annie Fry YouTube channel, but I'm going to continue the broadcast. When we get done here, I'm going to play that video on our live broadcast. So get on the Annie Fry YouTube channel, and we can watch that together. I want to talk about evil in the next hour, because you're talking about trying to understand the evil. Let's discuss that when we come back.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.